calling the Health, Education, and Social Services meeting together, and it is 3:05. Legislators present are Representative Newman, Representative Faircloth, Representative Gardner, Representative Roses, and myself, Wilson. Becky Rooney is our Hess aide, and our Hess secretary is Kelly Burnett, and our moderator is Dylan Ash. And the order of the business for today is that, first of all, we will review the qualifications for one of the governor's appointees and to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. And then from there, we were going to hear Senate Bill 97, and that is being held in another committee, so we won't be hearing that. And House Bill 252, leave for organ or bone marrow transplants, will be the only bill on our agenda today. And let the record show that Representative Sisna has joined us. So what we're going to do, first of all, is hear the qualifications and of Eric Dragas. And Eric, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Eric, tell us why you want this, or I don't know whether you applied for it or whether you were just appointed or what, but tell us a little bit about yourself and why we should pass on your on to the next committee.
Well, I mean, as a lifelong Alaskan, I'm dedicated to education. You know, I coach high school hockey at West Valley here in Fairbanks. I attended the University of Alaska in Fairbanks and graduated with an elementary education degree. And, you know, being passionate about education and that being, you know, a very important part of my life, I would like to serve on the Board of Regents and be able to, you know, work with that group to better the university's mission.
All right, thank you. Was there anything else you'd like to add?
Not at this time.
All right. Is there any member of the committee that would like to ask Mr. Dragas a question? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually don't have a question, Mr. Dragas, but I have asked around about you, and you seem to have a really awesome reputation.
Well, thank you.
Sort of community activist and advocate.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you for being willing to serve.
I'm happy to.
Any other questions? Well, you're making it very easy, I guess. do I hear a motion then? Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I make a motion to move from committee a confirmation of to the University Board of Regents, Eric Dragas.
All right. So it has been moved that we have reviewed your qualifications and we'll be moving you on to the floor for a joint session of the House and Senate for acceptance or not, whichever. And
okay.
But anyway, having heard no objections, so moved. And congratulations, Mr. Dragas. Dragas, isn't it?
Dragas, that's okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Congratulations. And this will be on the floor probably within the next week, I would say. I don't know for sure when. Yeah, a couple days maybe.
So okay.
Anyway, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
All right, now we have before us House Bill. Just a second. House Bill 252, Representative Ledoux. Would you come forward and your staff and tell us about your bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for agreeing to hear House Bill 252, which is an act requiring paid leave from employment for organ and bone marrow donations. And for the record, my name is Gabrielle Ledoux, and I am the representative from House District 36. This bill would require an employer who employs 100 people or more to grant paid leave of absence to an employee for the purpose of making a personal organ or bone marrow donation. The employer is not required to provide more than 80 hours of leave. However, the leave may not be less than 40 hours unless the employee requests fewer hours. According to Bruce Zanarata, CEO of Life Alaska Donor Services, there are 160 patients waiting for a kidney transplant and under 100 people in Alaska awaiting a bone marrow transplant. The matching rate for bone marrow donors is rare, approximately 1 in 100,000 people. According to Blood Bank of Alaska, that manages the bone marrow program in the state, there are about 5 Alaskans per year donating bone marrow. There is a Senate version of this bill that only addresses bone marrow donation, and it has the requirement of 20 employees rather than 100 as this House version. Bruce Zanarata, CEO of Life Alaska Donor Services, is online to answer questions you may have, and I also have, who is more familiar with the technicalities of this bill, my aide, Christine Marasigan, who is here with me. Thank you.
Representative Fairclough.
First, Madam Chair, for committee members, I want to acknowledge that I could have a possible conflict of interest. I am listed on the donor registry for bone marrow transplant, so I'm not sure if I can become a recipient of this, but I'm on the list already. So I just would acknowledge that.
Okay, thank you for acknowledging it.
That's not my question.
But, I want you to know that I was, but now they told me I'm too old, and so I'm off.
Oh.
Well, we had a Boy Scout in our community that was actively pursuing donor matches, and so it was for his Eagle Scout project. On page 2, when I was reading the, and let me preface it by saying I'm supportive of the concept, but I have a couple questions that I'd like to air out. On page 2, lines 17 through 19, in regards to collective bargaining agreements and the ability to donate leave, those are usually left to internal policies and procedures by individual corporations or companies. And so I'm wondering if we're overstepping our bounds allowing the transfer of leave. In a company that I ran, it was a new policy that we actually established in our, because we thought it was a good thing that when you had individuals who were sick or facing a medical challenge. But I just wanted for the sponsor to talk about why that's important. And I'm concerned that inside of a collective bargaining unit that we might be saying anything into the ins or outs of that. So that's my first question.
Representative Ledoux, do you have a question for that?
I'm hoping Christine does.
And actually, Representative Fairclough, through the chair.
Christine won't put
you. Oh, I apologize. For the record, my name is Christine Marasigan, staff to Representative Gabrielle Ledoux. Representative Fairclough, through the chair. Yes, you're right in that we'd kind of look at that language as well, but I believe the key word would be on line 18 where it says may.
Just to follow up on that, in a bargaining unit, I don't think that we can allow, thank you, Madam Chair, I don't know whether we can, I guess that's my question, that you, I don't know if you can, maybe Representative Roses can speak more to that, but I'll let that one go. I just am asking for the overall policy, and inside of the corporation that I ran, that was a new policy, sort of cutting edge, which I really appreciate, not bleeding edge, but cutting edge as to the way we might face things. And then the only other issue that I have is the impact on businesses on the administrative side. If I guess I look at our state ferry system only because I serve on transportation, and I know that people are on defined shifts that are sometimes 24/7s, and if you pull somebody out of a system that is on a boat or that kind of facility, you could cause the employer to have time and a half to bring someone from somewhere else. And so I did speak to your Representative Ledoux, to your office staff about this concern, and I understand that there are very few people that it would affect, and so that's alleviated my mind to the fiscal impact, but if you could just speak to that for me, too.
Representative Fairclough, through the chair, I think what you bring up is an excellent point. I mean, what happens if, let's say, you have an organization or a business, whether it be the state or private employer, who, I mean, you've got this employee, they decide they're going to donate a kidney, There's complications with the extraction of the kidney, although it's very rare. And then that person's laid out of work for more than the time allotted. And then you have to hire somebody else from far away to then, you know, make up that work and pay them at a rate that would have been higher if the person hadn't had the time off to do that. And it was interesting, sir, because I've posed this question to somebody else that was in our staff, and they said, well, what if the person that they're donating to is somebody who really needs the kidney who works for the same company? You know, the state of Alaska is pretty big in terms of an employer. I mean, it could be very well that it's rare that you have somebody step forward to donate a kidney that doesn't know the person already. And that's how they kind of go through this whole, you know, matching. There's like an extensive process where you screen, and a lot of times it's because it's through word of mouth or that you know that person in that community or even through the workplace that you would even come up with a match. So in some senses, you're absolutely right in bringing that up, but on the other hand, the other side could be that you could be getting back two workers instead of just losing one.
And let me interject a point here. The state of Alaska has over...
Representative, go ahead.
Representative Faircloth, through the chair. The state of Alaska has, as I understand it, over 600,000 people. There are only 160 patients right now waiting for kidney transplants, and there are under 100 people awaiting bone marrow transplants. So the number of people you're going to be talking about is exceedingly small, and then this only applies to employers who are employing over 100 people. So, I mean, as far as your small mama and papa business, this is going to have absolutely no impact on them. This is going to apply to the state and to the large corporate employers.
Okay. Representative Roses?
Thank you. I guess the first concern I would have would be whether or not this is how you're going to enforce it. I mean, because you're mandating that they give somebody leave, who's going to be there to monitor whether these businesses are actually doing this or not, is the first issue that I have. The second one that I have is, this would be a question, and that is, do you know whether or not when someone donates a kidney from an insurance perspective, whether that is considered to be elective surgery, or is it covered by insurance?
Representative Roses, through the chair. First of all, in addressing your first question, your second question is we do have somebody from Life Alaska Donor Services online who can answer that for you in terms of the insurance question. And then could you please repeat your first question again?
The first one was, how are you going to enforce it?
Representative Roses, through the chair. I would think there really isn't a way to enforce it, other than this would be a way for employers to offer the paid leave, and also for employees who are interested in doing something like this, that there is something in the statute in order to request that leave, that particular type of leave.
May I follow up?
Follow up, Representative
Bruce
Roses.
That's online. Could I get him to answer the question that I had regarding elective surgery, whether or not it's considered elective surgery, whether or not it's covered by insurance?
Yes, for the record, my name is Bruce Zelnoratis with Life Alaska Donor Services. Representative Roses, through the chair, I would like to say that in the United States, kidney disease for U.S. citizens is completely covered by the End-Stage Renal Disease Act, which is under Medicare. So for surgery related to the kidney transplant and the follow-up care, that is already covered by insurance.
For the donor?
For the donor and the recipient,
yes.
The donor, however, is not covered for transportation to the hospital or for time lost from work.
May I follow up?
By the insurance.
So if it is covered by insurance, then it's not considered to be elective surgery. If it's not considered to be elective surgery, would this not be covered under the Family Medical Leave Act that we already have in place and just
about it? I don't know that it is elective surgery for the donor because they're a healthy person. It's certainly not for the recipient.
Oh, no. The question I was asking was, is it elective surgery for the donor? Because typically when you're not allowed to use Family Medical Leave Act or where you're not allowed to use your sick leave that you already have accumulated, it's because it's considered to be elective surgery, the same as if somebody went in for a gastric bypass or somebody went in to have, you know, an eye lift or something, you know, a tummy tuck or whatever. Those types of surgeries are considered to be elective surgery and therefore not covered under insurance. And in many cases, elective surgery is not covered under the Family Medical Leave Act or any other portion of the employer's leave possibility. So if that's really...
I can just say that as not an expert in insurance, but I do know this, that the surgical procedure for donating the kidney is covered by the same insurance that covers the recipient for getting the transplant. Okay. And that's the End-Stage Renal Disease Act.
So...
Which is under Medicare.
Right. So the question that we have, though, doesn't affect that. The question is you know, we're trying to figure out if it's elective surgery or not, if they could therefore get the benefits of time off.
And I'm not an expert. I would say it is elective surgery for the donor,
okay,
since they are healthy and otherwise have no medical problem.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In reference to Representative Fairclough's question, it just happens to be an issue I was investigating on a similar issue that had to do with wage and hour. And the director of wage and hour informed me that persons covered under collective bargaining agreements typically do not have to state statute sideboards do not apply to them because they have their own agreement between themselves and their employer-employee relationship. So in this area, as far as collective bargaining agreement, would I see this? I think there's some questions because that's a different issue. Questions that I have.
Representative Newman, so I'm just going to follow up with, so that tells me that this would not affect any state employees then because they would go according to what their union contract said.
Madam Chair, I believe that if you work for the United Food Workers and you work for that union or a specific union and had your own collective bargaining agreement, that agreement between you and your union, employer-employee, does not fall under state statute. They do not have to follow state statute. So the enforceability of this, I think, could be questioned.
Okay. Did you have follow-up, Representative Newman?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Is there a limit? Several questions, Madam Chair, if I may. Is there a limit to the number of times that the employee can use a paid leave?
Representative Newman, through the chair, no, that is not outlined in this bill.
Does this include the recuperation only, or does it include, Madam Chair, if I may just continue, just the actual surgery, recuperation hours, or how does all that work and how those hours are broke down?
Representative Newman, through the chair, from my emails back and forth with people who deal with bone marrow donors and people who donate kidneys, recuperation time can vary. There's some states provide up to a month of leave for state employees if they're donating a kidney. And for bone marrow transplant, sometimes it's 2 to 3 weeks. When I was discussing this bill with a few other organizations, we'd kind of settled on this time frame as one that could be, on the one hand, flexible in that, let's say, it takes longer for the person to actually go through the screening process, and maybe they have to travel to go and do the actual donation, as was what happened with the young boy from Juneau, where he had to fly to Seattle, but his donor was actually found in New Mexico. But had that been a slightly different situation, maybe they would have had to both fly to Seattle. So we sort of took a medium for the amount of time allotted. And it also says that, you know, for some people, recuperation time is pretty good. I mean, you're going to hopefully choose and select a healthy candidate that is going to be doing the donating. And so if their recuperation time is faster, they don't have to take the full amount of time. They can request to actually have less.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair.
It's Mr. It's been elective surgery here on chairs.
and surgically implanted?
I hope not. Did you want to continue? Were you through?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have any other questions for right now. I do, when we get back to committee discussion, maybe have some discussion there.
Do you have a question? Representative Faircloth?
I just wanted to go back as far as the enforceability first for the record. I believe it is an enforceable statute, that it would be covered by wage and hour if it was adopted and passed by both houses and signed by the governor. So, and what I'm looking at is leave of absences in current state statutes. So I believe wage and hour, if someone had a complaint at a local level that an employer wasn't offering it if this passed, that there would be enforceability, but it would be on a reactive basis, that the employee would say that they were in some way infringed upon. But going back to the collective bargaining on page 2, I don't want to hold up the bill, so I would leave it to the sponsor to check the question, but how I read that sentence, not being an attorney, is that you're leaving it to the employee to decide whether he can donate or not in and outside of a bargaining agreement. And I don't think an employee can make that decision, that the bargaining, that the collective bargaining agreement is in between the employer and the union as their representatives of the employee. And so it could create some conflict. I'm just not sure. I know I used to work, for disclosure, for United Food and Commercial Workers as a membership service person, and previous that as an employee of Cars Godstein in Eagle River, Alaska. And so I know that we had some policies in place that allowed internally to donate to another employee, but I don't know that I could contribute outside of that. And by that I mean I was called a front-end person, a night manager, and then there is a category called like a meat manager that would be under a different employment contract, and their wage scale was much different than mine, and so I'm not sure that you could donate between the two. And so I would just ask for clarification as you move forward to the floor.
Representative Ledoux, we also have Gray Mitchell online where we can go and get some of these questions answered, but Representative Ledoux?
I was just going to say that if this bill passes out of committee, that we won't commit ourselves to working on that and clarifying that.
Okay. Gray Mitchell, do you have any comments on the things that have been brought up in terms of enforcement and the concern that was brought up regarding whether or not you can spell out in a bill that an employee is covered by a collective bargaining and may donate leave?
Hi, yes, this is Gray Mitchell. I'm the director of the Labor Standards and Safety Division at Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And I guess my first comment is that that I do believe the law is enforceable, although I don't see that it will be a significant enforcement impact on wage and hour or the department. You know, it's only going to apply to larger employers with 100 or more employees and only to employees that have 30 or more hours per week. And those employees are likely to have, you know, sick and annual leave benefits to cover absences like these in most cases. The one thing that I can see is that it's going to be kind of tough to enforce. You know, when we do get a case, although I don't think we're going to get a lot, you know, there really isn't a penalty associated with a violation. So basically, I think all we're really going to be able to do is explain the law and try to persuade the employer to do the right thing. You know, other than that, really, there's no enforcement mechanism. As far as the collective bargaining agreement, this statute in Title 39 really deals only with public employees, and you know, it's as I understand this is existing language that's in the law, and the only change is that little section there at the end where they're adding a reference to, you know, AS 39 20 310 7 and 8. So I can't explain why this language is there. Maybe someone from Department of Administration, Division of Personnel can speak to that issue, but I believe it's only applying to public employees.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mitchell, so Duke, if a union that is not a public employees union, like the United Food Workers or or pharmacy workers, has their own collective bargaining agreement. Are they held, do they fall under the same guidelines as under Alaska statute?
They do. Representative Newman, through the chair, they do, they are subject to the legal requirements. I think where, you know, the issue you had raised earlier comes from is that there's a provision, it's a federal act, the Labor Management Relations Act, I believe it's called, that basically requires a union member to go through their collective bargaining grievance process and exhaust that process before, you know, they can come to the state for us to pursue enforcement action of a statute. So to the extent that their union agreement covered this issue, they would have to exhaust that remedy first before we could help them at the state of Alaska.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you for the clarification. It is, this particular point is current code or current statute, and it does, I'm at it in the state statutes, and it is for public officers and employees, so it's within the state of Alaska for the contracts. And I just also might note for the record that the exemptions here, the new ones, were exactly speaking to the ferry system that I was talking about for dual overtime. So take it a little bit further. But anyway, I hope that the sponsor can go forward and make sure that our intent is clear, that we just don't want to step in the middle of a violation of wage and hour.
Mr. Mitchell, can you tell me whether or not this type of situation would be covered under the current regulations under the Family Medical Leave Act?
Is that the chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that that it would not, because the individual who's donating is not suffering from a serious medical condition, which is the primary trigger to be covered under the Family Medical Leave Act, either that or, you know, pregnancy, childbirth.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, not for Mr. Mitchell, but for the sponsor.
Go ahead.
Representative Ledoux, when I'm looking on page one, line nine, and because I have just this philosophical thing in me that says I don't like mandating onto a business any more than I do a municipality. We've heard certainly from the municipalities on mandates that they receive. We've heard from the school districts on mandates that they receive from government. I don't like the idea of the state mandating to any private business what they shall and shall not do. When I look at the word shall, you know, I would certainly would like to probably see the word may, and I hate to get into that may shall discussion that's happening these days, but you know, could you speak to how you may feel about that?
Well, the problem there, Representative Newman, through the chair, is if you eliminate shall and put in may, you effectively gut the entire bill, because they can do this now, or they may do this now, even without the bill. And while I certainly understand your philosophy, and in most cases I tend to agree with your philosophy, with respect to employer-employee relations, there are many things that we mandate. We mandate overtime. We mandate minimum wage. We mandate an entire slew of regulations. And as I see this, since it only applies to employers of more than 100 people, and so, and because the number of people that this is going to affect is so limited, we're talking about, you know, probably less than 200 people that it would be even be applicable to. let alone people who would be off work. But the potential benefits to the people that can benefit from this are so huge that I'd say that this is one of those few cases where I think that the mandate would be appropriate.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Representative Ledoux, while I disagree that I think, respectively certainly, disagree that although the state mandates minimum wage and workman's comp and issues like that, I think that that is probably a necessary evil of what we do. But are you saying that currently that private industry has to allow paid medical leave for a, as Representative Rose has stated, a voluntary medical process?
Representative Newman, through the chair, no, I'm not saying that right now they have to do it. What I'm saying is is that this bill requires certain employees to do it. But right, if you change the word shall to may, then they could do it now. I mean, there's no law prohibiting an employer from granting leave.
I hate to beat a dead horse, but there's no law that says that you can or can't or may not or have to, have not, do not have to pay medical leave for a voluntary medical procedure?
No, through the chair, no.
And there's insurance, if I may, there's insurance companies would allow that, or I guess your own, I guess that'd be up to your own business, just like a collective bargaining agreement would decide on it. Anyhow, I have some real problems with that part. I've already talked to the
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I share Representative Newman's concern. I mean, I believe that donating blood or marrow or kidneys or any organ is a wonderful gift, and I certainly approach or approve of efforts to encourage that, to establish registries to make it easy. But and I would consider seriously doing a state program to require state employees. In fact, the sheets that are passed out from NCSL that have lists of other states that have required it, I've go through enough of about 30 of them, 23 of them apply only to state employees. You cross a line when you basically are saying to a private employer, even if it's limited to an employer of 100 people or more, that if one of their employees wants to make this wonderful gift, that they also have to provide a gift to the donee. To the donee, is that the right word? Yeah.
Recipient. Donor.
Recipient, yes. Not to the donor, to the recipient, to be part of it. And while I'd like to think that a lot of big employers would want to do that if the issue is raised, I just don't feel that it's necessarily something the state should require of them.
And through the chair, Representative Gardner, when we were considering this bill, we originally considered just limiting it to the state of Alaska, and then we decided, I mean, it's a policy call where you draw the line, mm-hmm. and we decided that the line would be appropriately drawn at the figure of 100 or more employees.
Okay. Question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Sorry for getting here late. I see two sections, 23 and 39. Could you just, you've probably been over that, but would you mind telling me what those two sections, why we have it duplicated here?
I have 23
and 39. Well, we have a modification on page one, section two is modifying.
Oh, I see.
Section 7310044, and then on page two, we're line 29, section five is 3920.
I'm lost.
39, I've got the statute out, if I might, Mr.
Please, go ahead, Representative Faircloth.
Did you, Representative, are you asking for what those statutes are or why they're being modified or?
Yes, well, why we're modifying the two of them. Are they two different, is one of them schools and one of them, I mean, I.
Actually, that's a new subsection. The 3920-275 is entering a new section into statute. It doesn't currently exist on line 30.
But Title 39.
3920 does. 3920 is public officers and official and employees. It's how it governs the state.
And that's exactly what compensation, Mr. Mitchell was referring to.
Right, compensation allowances and leave for state workers, basically.
And like I say, I'm sorry I arrived late. And then if, do you also have Title 23 there that we're modifying?
2310?
Yes, 2310.
Mr. Mitchell, while they're looking that up, did you have any other comments on anything that you've heard so far, since this has a direct impact on your department?
No, I can, I think, probably clarify that Title 23 is just dealing with the Wage and Hour Act and employment practices and working conditions for private employers, things like employment contracts, deductions from wages, that kind of thing.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions, Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Newman? Anybody else? Any other committee members with any other questions or? Any other comments from the sponsor before we take any action on this bill?
None other than, you know, we'll try to work with whatever future committees to resolve any problems.
Okay. Bruce, are you still online?
Yes, sir.
Do you have anything else you would like to add to the conversation before we close public testimony?
No, if there's any more questions, I'm glad to answer.
Okay. Anybody in the audience that had any questions or comments whose names I did not receive? I don't see any. Representative Faircloth and then Representative Seaton. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just a little unfamiliar here with this. Where it says an employer who employs 100 and more shall pay provide paid leave for the purpose of making a personal organ transplant, does that include being tested and qualifying, or is that only after testing and qualifying have occurred and there's an actual organ or bone marrow donation being made?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, it covers the actual act of doing the donation itself and recuperation time.
Oh, and so it does. It specifically does not include the act of being tested and those procedures.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we don't specify that it can't not be used for the screening process. Representative Seaton, through the chair, if I can clarify a little. Because we've grouped both organ donation and bone marrow donation into one bill, the procedure for getting screened for bone marrow donation is fairly simple. It's, you know, a swab on the inside of the cheek, and then it's the process of that whole process of wanting, of trying to find the match once they have that sample. And then, yes, there is a screening process before they do the actual extraction of bone marrow. For kidney donation, and I'm hoping that Mr. Bruce Saltonius is still online so he can
yes.
correct me if I'm wrong here, but the process for kidney donation is slightly different in order to find a match. So it doesn't specify, like, how much time would be used for the screening process or for the actual procedure itself or for the recuperation time. It just gives a chunk of time for if the intent is to make a donation, that there's that time for that.
If I might, Bruce Salmeratis speaking.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, that process of kidney donation preparation, if you will, involves three main steps. There's the psychosocial step. There's the medical suitability, the person's healthy enough, and then there's the immunological step. Each of those steps needs to be carried through before the candidate is eligible to donate a kidney. And only after those steps are done, then the person can be brought into the kidney transplant center, in this case, mostly Seattle, for the procedure.
Thank you, sir.
All the other steps are done while the person remains in Alaska.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to get a definitive answer as a private employer would be required to give paid leave for someone to go down, or their entire employee base to go down to be tested and screened and identified as to whether they whether they're eligible for giving, in this place, say kidney, it could be some other lung, could be something else, I guess. But I'm just trying to get the sideboards of whether this law would require the employer to give paid leave for that evaluation process. And I'm not sure.
Bruce, if I may ask you this question. Do you define testing for organ donation the same as you do making a personal organ or bone marrow donation? Do you consider those to be the same?
No, sir. Testing would involve the establishment of health and the establishment of an immunologic match with the recipient candidate, which is a series of blood tests.
Thank you very much. I sort of suspected that. I just wanted it on the record because I think that clarification takes away the question that Representative Seaton is asking, which is, does testing require then that the employer grant leave? And the way I read this, it just says for the donation. So is that your understanding of the language as well? And I see the sponsor of the bill is trying to interject here. Go ahead.
It is certainly Chairman Rose's. It was not our intent to make the employer pay for the testing. We don't feel that that's what the bill in its present form says. But if there's uncertainty in this committee that that's what it says, we would be very amenable to a friendly amendment clarifying that in some way.
Thank you. Representative Newman and then Representative Fairclough.
Thank you. Just when I was reading that too, when I'm reading the sponsor statement in the second paragraph, it says, for living donors, paid leave may be needed for the screening process.
Representative Newman, through the chair. And the reason why that language is in there is because of the nature of testing is different for kidney donation than it is for bone marrow donation. And I think, Mr. Zeltraneas, if you had talked about what it would mean to be screened for kidney donation, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not only the whole screening process where, you know, you're checking on the health of the donor and et cetera, but you also have to do certain kinds of blood tests even close to the time right before the person has to make a donation in order for that person to donate a kidney.
Yes, again, we're concerned about the health prior to and up until the surgery itself. And so testing is done for matching as well as for health reasons.
So for point of clarification to follow up on Representative Newman's question, in the sponsor statement where it says you may need leave, but then I heard you say that that was not the intent to cover the leave for the testing, only for the actual procedure. So for further clarification, you're just asking for the actual procedure to be covered by the employer, not the testing. Is that correct?
Representative Rose, that is correct, but I just wanted, because of the nature of the donation, sometimes you're screened right up until the time you go into surgery. Okay, just want to make sure that was clear.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, when someone goes back to look for our findings or talk about this, it says on HB 252, line 9, that an employer who employs 100 or more employees shall provide A, A to me means singular, as I vote to move this bill along. Paid leave of absence to an employee for the purposes of making a personal organ or bone marrow donation. And so if the absence is contiguous, as in prep work for final match and blood work, then that is a donation sample, not the testing that leads up to it in different states or different times off. And so as I move this bill and support it moving out of committee, it's a single absence for an employer that they would look at a floor of 40 hours to provide that, and 80 hours as a max that would be a limited liability in an administrative leave process, as I understand it, that they would not be, that their leave bank would not be taken away to do this, that this is a benefit that we're considering passing on.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in Section 3 on page 2, I'm sorry I missed it. I was in finance here dealing with other things. But is the donation of the leave to another employee, could I get that explained to me?
You're talking about line 17?
Section B there, starting on line 9.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fairclough.
Representative Seaton, I had similar questions, and was so pointed out to me that it's current state statute. The only thing that's changing is notwithstanding, and it includes AS 3920.30.10 number 7, and my questions were specific to what happens when we have to pay time and a half to, like, in our ferry system as a hypothetical for people that we fly into particular location, and it's notwithstanding specifically in the section. I can read to it. I've moved off of it. 3107, temporary employees for periods of less than 12 consecutive months, and number 8, which is the on that next line, persons employed by the Division of Marine Transportation as masters and members of crews operating the state ferry systems who are covered by collective bargaining agreements. So that sort of hit the nail right on the head of what I had been asking for, because those are sort of vital positions inside of the state that would cost us quite a bit of money to replace those particular people if they were out on leave.
And I appreciate, and I again apologize for missing most of the discussion, but I guess my question comes, we're adding a new leave section, 80 hours of new, and creating a new leave, and is that fall under the donation provisions so that we really don't have an 80 hour because the other employees around can donate their paid organ donor leave to a pool that then can be used for essentially eliminating the cap on the 80 hours. That, Mr. Chairman, that's a question I may have already been answered, but I'm not sure. And it,
no,
I just
that's almost different.
Oh. Do you have a response for that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I was going to actually defer to the wage and hour folks if they were still online, if they would like to provide.
Mr. Mitchell, are you still online?
I am still online.
Did you catch that last question?
I did, and I can't provide an explanation for it.
Any further questions, Representative Sisson?
Well, just to sort of another part of this is just having an idea of the, and it may have been mentioned before, but I didn't hear it, the scope of the problem. How many transplants have there been, or organ and bone marrow donations? Have there been in, say, maybe a yearly basis or something like that? And I would assume as we age, that's gonna increase in the state. But just kind of some baseline here. Do you have any statistics?
Bruce, I'm sorry that I don't refer to as Mr., but I can't pronounce your last name, so I'm just going to call you Bruce.
Right. I could answer that.
Please do.
Living kidney donation in the state of Alaska, just from recent discussions with a nephrologist who takes care of kidney patients, it's been averaging no more than 10 times a year. Between 6 and 10 times a year, a living kidney donation takes place.
Thank you. Representative Faircloth.
Just to add fuel for the conversation, Representative Seaton, what Representative Ledoux has brought before us is a new exemption, like jury duty, where the state would say to employers that there is now, on top of jury duty, I'm trying to think of anything else that I think jury duty fits the best with this one, that an employee may receive between 40 and 80 hours of paid administrative leave, I have that right, I want the sponsor to chime in, for an organ or bone marrow donation. Under 3920245, that speaks specifically to donation of leave. And so where your question goes, can you contribute? I think you can. If there was, as we said, a complication, and someone was still out sick, they could contribute other money to that particular person's account, but that the state or the employer of over 100 is still only responsible for the floor of 40 or the ceiling of 80. And they have to have a doctor's excuse to keep them out, so it's not like people would just donate into a leave bank and somebody be able to work the system. I'm not sure if that gets to your question.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it does. I mean, if this new leave benefit is donatable to a bank or to a pool,
there's not a bank, Representative Seaton. It's an individual. It's creating a benefit for an individual who would be providing an organ or bone marrow transplant. So you're absolutely right. There are other places that you can donate to funds. Because I read it, you can donate leave to an education fund is what I read for an educational amount. That's not what this speaks to. This is saying you can donate to an individual who may or may not be receiving under this, or you can donate to that education account. But there's not a new fund being created. There is only a person that may donate a kidney or a bone marrow or something else. But there's not a new fund that just multiple people can donate into. That's my understanding, if the sponsor could respond.
Well, and Mr. Chairman,
please.
That was my question, and we didn't get a definitive answer from Retirement Benefits that these couldn't be donated to. I mean, we have on page 2B about an employee with the approval of further authorizing employment may donate the accrued personal leave and annual leave. And my question was, does this create another type of leave that could be donated? And I just think that we need from Retirement and Benefits. I mean, I can ask a question, but I don't have the definitive answer. And
Chairman Rose, if I could read 3920245, donation of leave A. An officer or employee may donate one or more days of personal leave a year to a Memorial Education Revolving Fund. That's what 245 is speaking to. So if you wanted to donate to the Memorial Education Fund, you could do so, but that's not tying our hands when it comes to the donor and bone marrow, the donation of bone marrow or an organ.
Thank you.
Maybe we could try one more time to the representative online.
Mr. Mitchell, did you hear that conversation? Do you have anything to add to that may add some clarification or further muddy the waters, either way?
Something, anything. Actually, I was just I was looking at this section, section 3, and, you know, I was kind of focusing in on what was changed, and it looks like the only thing that was changed was the numbering of the paragraphs that are referenced in that section. So, you know, and this is a section of law that I am not, you know, I don't enforce this on a regular basis, and you know, I don't think we've ever really had to deal with this, because this is a general, you know, state Department of Administration Division of Personnel issue that deals with employees donating leave between employees that work for the state. But that's all it looks like. And then if you look at that list of exceptions in Section 6 on page 3, it starts at line 11 and goes down, it looks like there was a paragraph at line 22 where something was repealed, and then there was some renumbering that went on. But that's all I can see the change was, and I guess I can't figure it out myself. So I don't know the answer to the question, but it seems like what we're dealing here is with here is really, I mean, it doesn't look like there's any change in the existing state law.
Representative Faircloth.
Just for clarification, what you see on page 3, line 22, number 4 repealed to 5, happened in 1982. It's an exact duplication of what's in current state statute. So the new numbering at the bottom, as you said, from 5, 6. Three is now entailing what the old four used to, I'm sorry, the old five used to have on it. They've inserted a semicolon and then added at the end of three the line that is currently on line 23 that has five with the bracket that's deleting it. They've moved that up and it's under number three now.
So it's just a renumbering?
Yes.
Representative Newman, you had a question or comment?
I guess a question, Mr. Chair, Representative Ledoux. So if a person's used up all their vacation time, used up their sick time, if they have it available, because I know I work for a company that is over 100 that doesn't have sick time, they don't, in fact, there's quite a few that don't have sick time. This mandates that they have to give that to you if you have, if you decide to donate an organ.
Yes.
Any further questions? I guess that probably what I would have preferred to see, rather than have a leave act, is for the state to create some kind of a fund where the employers could go to that to be reimbursed for the leave that the people had, so there was no expense to the employer. I mean, if we're talking 200 people in the state, you're talking person, you're talking about 80 hours at $30 an hour, that's $2,400 times 100 people is $240,000. So if we started a grant fund with that amount of money, we wouldn't have, and then we could get matching funds from other areas, I think we would be, then you don't get into all of this leave and granting and transferring and donating, and but it's neither here nor there, but that's what we have before. So any other comments or questions or concerns from the committee? Any other follow-up by Mr. Mitchell or Bruce, either one, before we close out here?
No, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity to be available.
And thank you both very much for your attempt to add clarity to what we tried to muddy up for you. So, Representative Sista.
Well, I guess my question would be to the sponsor. And just having heard this conversation and, you know, my late husband had a kidney transplant, and they gave him 10 more years to his life. And I know just how important that is, and how hard it is to find a match, and how people live in a half life for a long time if they're on dialysis and until they get that. And that's my personal experience. I know there's lots of other stories like that. So I think this is really important. At the very same time, we have small businesses that are, and 100 workers is, I think, considered a small business, really, in a lot of circles, that are really having problems right now. And I'm just wondering how open Representative Ledoux you are to maybe following through on some suggestions like Representative Rosas made, because it sounds to me, just having learned to this, listen to this committee, that there's kind of some maybe emotion that might
might speed this through faster by creating some mechanism to help shoulder the burden anyway. It may be not a total reimbursement, but maybe a partial reimbursement, some kind of compromise that gets more people on board.
Before you answer that, let me go ahead and I want to close public testimony and go ahead and if you want to answer Representative Sisna, please go ahead. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess I'm thinking that 100 people really doesn't, 100 employees really doesn't qualify as a small business. I mean, the businesses that I think that this picks up are the Walmarts, the BPs, the ConocoPhillips, the Exxons. I mean, I don't see small businesses as having 100 employees or more. That's not really a small business. And I think, you know, the fiscal impact on these relatively large corporations is going to be pretty relatively small. And, you know, so, you know, I could probably live if you wanted to put it at 150 or something, or some figure like that. If that makes people feel more comfortable.
Representative Ledoux, I think you're probably going to hit a lot of seasonal businesses where they have 100 employees. I mean, some of the canneries, some of those kinds of things you may get into, you know, overall of 100 employees for seasonal times of the year, but other times of the year they don't. And so I guess part of the question there would be, are you talking about somebody that has 100 employees full-time year-round or, you know, where's the clarification on that? So I think that's part of the concern as well.
I understand that, Chairman Rose's, but if you're talking about the canneries, I mean, most of these canneries are huge multinational corporations, and while, for example, in Kodiak, some of them may have 200 for 6 months out of the year, throughout their international employment places, they've got thousands of people.
Any other questions from anybody on the committee? Seeing none, anybody want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair. Sure.
So, do you have a question? Representative Seed.
Have you been through amendments?
Not yet.
Okay.
Are we in community discussion now?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a conceptual amendment or amendment that on page 1, line 9, would remove the word shall and put in there may. And it just goes to a philosophy that I have, because it maybe comes from the fact that I am a business owner, but the relationship between an employee and employer is a relationship that should be struck between those two individuals, the company and the employee only. And I have a problem trying to reach to the fact that the state is going to mandate to any business in this state what they have to and have not do as far as an employee benefit goes. And I understand there's things like workman's comp and minimum wage, but I don't consider that as employee benefit, but it just is a necessary need that has to play that levels the playing field amongst all businesses. But that when it comes to benefits to an employee, I mean, there's companies that are working in Prudhoe Bay that go two-on, two-off. A lot of companies don't offer.
Okay, well, you made an amendment on page 1, line 9 to change shall to may. Is there any objection to the amendment?
I'll object.
Okay, I want to go ahead and continue. Any further discussion?
So for that reason, just my philosophy in that, I, when I look at what I think, what is the state's job? You know, in serving the people, I don't think that is there. I don't think that this meets that need. I'm sorry, as much as I'd like to, you know, I'd want to see this bill. I think it does a lot of good things. I think it has a lot of good verbiage in it, but I just can't make a mandate on business.
Representative Fairclough, you want to speak to your objection?
I actually voiced the same concern, so I feel sort of painted into a different picture, but I was willing to let it go so that Representative Ledoux could advance and have the conversation with State Affairs and a broader discussion, but to speak to the objection, because I think politicians are used to hearing both sides of the issue, for a controversy sake, let me throw out another idea as to why benefits are provided by employers. We provide jury duty as a benefit because socially we want people to participate in a judicial system to look at their peers. We provide workman comp benefits so that we have healthy employees and we want safe business practices inside of businesses to grow and prosper, to contribute to an economy that is good for all of Alaska. And so I would ask for your consideration that when we have people that are out on Medicaid benefits or Medicare or extended leave waiting on donor lists for a donor to become available, that is costing society, that is costing Alaska in more than one way, costing us both on the medical rolls and your insurance rolls, on the workman's comp rolls if they're currently an employee, and as the sponsor alluded to, that in a company our size, like the state of Alaska, that we could have someone that has kidney failure, that the state of Alaska, through our own self-insurance program, is paying insurance benefits for years, waiting for somebody to come into the system to help that person regain a healthy lifestyle again and possibly reenter the workforce. And so what I would propose for consideration is that a floor of 40 and a ceiling of 80 that would affect 100 people statewide is, Representative Newman, I totally agree. I don't want an unfunded mandate on a single business around. But, and as Representative Gardner's pointed out, I would more support an amendment that says this is the state of Alaska and we're going to provide this benefit for state employees because we have such a large pool. And knowing that of the 100, we maybe get hit with 30 or 40 of those with a floor of 40 hours and a ceiling of 80. That's much more along the lines of what I would like to see. But there is a benefit both socially and economically to providing a donor to get that person off of a wait list so that they can re-enter society. And so, with that, I'll close.
Representative Sisna,
and then yeah, Gardner. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would like to, if the objection was removed by Representative Faircloth, I would probably object because it does gut the bill, and it kind of takes out any really good resolution that would follow. For instance, the ideas that have been voiced here, other, and you yourself, Mr. Chair, suggested one alternative, and I personally would like to see this bill go through and have it fixed in a way that it gets the votes it needs to pass.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. Speaking to the amendment.
Yes, speaking to the amendment, I actually would like to work with the sponsor of the amendment to offer something along the lines, if he's interested, of a conceptual amendment so that the bill would apply only to state employees, because I think if the amendment on the table passes, the bill's dead anyway. It means nothing. We've had some discussion about other circumstances in which there's mandatory pay for leave, and the big example, I think, for that is jury duty, but jury duty is not optional. Jury duty is an obligation of citizenship, and if you're called to jury duty, you have to go. This is a situation where somebody is offering to give a very valuable gift. We're talking about donations, donors. I just don't think it's fair for the state to require that that person's employer participate and be a donor too.
So are you asking to amend the amendment, or you
I
just want to
I'd like to amend the amendment.
Just want to vote the amendment down and start over. That may be cleaner.
Mr. Chair, I offered the amendment to change the word from shall to may.
And that amendment's still on the table.
Okay.
I'm going to speak in opposition to the amendment because I think the amendment actually gives us what we have today. Any employer currently may do that if they choose. And so I think it basically gives us what we currently have. So I'm going to vote against the amendment as well. Representative Seaton, did you have
no
comment on? Okay. Seeing no other comment, then the objection still stands. So roll call on amendment number one, please, which would change the word shall to may, page one, line nine.
No.
Chairman Moses?
No.
Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Representative Speaking?
No.
Representative Sisna?
No.
Chair Wilson is away. I have five nays.
Thank you. So the amendment has failed. Representative Gardner.
I would like to offer a conceptual amendment that...
Call this number two, please.
Amendment number two.
Thank you.
That the provisions of the bill apply only for state employees.
Is there an objection to amendment number two?
Object.
Okay, there is an objection. You want to speak to your amendment? Or you probably already
I don't
have.
Think it's necessary.
You want to speak to your opposition? Please, Representative Newman.
I will speak to my objection.
That's what I said.
You're asking her. Yeah, you know, when I just look at where the state's at fiscally too, and it's all going to start coming down to a matter, if not next year, the year after. If people want to try and pool hours and to help Representative Foster, I'd love it. You know, I think that that's a wonderful thing, and I think a lot of businesses allow that. But to, again, where's all this money going to come from? Maybe I'm just too fiscally conservative, or I don't know how you want to call it, but I just can't get there, because it's just, where does the money come from? I am concerned on how we're going to pay for schools, how we're going to pay for a lot of things in this state, and to say that this just has to, again, I can't get there.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you. In response to Representative Newman, those are exactly the same concerns that I raised to Representative Ledoux. I checked the fiscal notes on this, and all of our departments agreed there was zero fiscal note, which I raised as a concern specifically. That's why I raised the ferry issue and having to bring someone in and those concerns. But we have from our administration saying that this is already within the confines of the labor agreements and your employment opportunities. The difference is that as you leave, that your work is either piled up or and someone else picks up the slack, but there's no new dollars going out for it. So I just would put that for your consideration, that there aren't new dollars, that it's not dollars, it's administrative credit, that you're still getting paid out. And it is a bonus in that you got extra time off if you did that, but you're not getting any new money. There's 2,000, is it 2,080 or 2,088 hours in a year, and you're not getting any more than that.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bottom line is, if you used up your vacation time, you've used up your annual leave time, you don't have sick time, it's got to come from somewhere. Or this time just is not, this money just doesn't appear.
Actually, I think I can address that. Having negotiated several contracts, I can assure you that in most large organizations like the state of Alaska or some of the larger school districts, you have donated leave provisions that are set up, and there are guidelines that are established when those parameters as to when someone can or cannot borrow from a, they have sick leave banks that are set up, and then if the sick leave bank does not, if the person doesn't qualify for that, then you can go out and get donated leave. And so if another state employee donates to that individual, or they go through a sick leave bank for which leave has been donated, you are diminishing the overall amount of leave. But when they calculate an employee's salary and benefits and they build that into the budget, they calculate in the average number of days that are taken in any one year by employees for leave, and that's what they do their budgeting on. If you have a year in which there's fewer days, they have money left in the budget. They have years in which there are more days, and they go back for a supplemental budget, and the following year then they increase the number of days. And we've been doing this and have done this in the Anchorage School District for many, many years. And so I would venture to guess that if you really looked at it, if a person did not utilize their leave, they're able to convert that sick leave time in order for days towards retirement. So if a person donated the leave, it actually costs less than if somebody were to take it into retirement and collect on it for however many years they were in retirement status. So in some ways, it actually, if a person used it up, may cost the state less money than if they actually carried it into retirement. Representative Sisnak.
Well, just kind of to frame this in terms of the magic of modern medicine, the fact is that although it doesn't seem like you get something for nothing, which almost it sounds like, the fact is that when you give a transplant, and they can be extraordinarily successful, the person who gets that transplant is so much more productive afterwards. It's like a new person that comes back into the labor pool. It really does. You get more for that in a way that it's hard to believe unless you, and we may see the same thing ourselves, and that's what's hard. It's hard to believe exactly what modern medicine does give us. It really gives us something that's, there was a lot of investment into that, but there's a big benefit.
Thank you. I guess the what we have before us then is a conceptual amendment that would restrict this to state employees. And is there any other discussion? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm wondering, to clarify the conceptual amendment, whether that includes the subdivisions of the state such or affiliates such as the University of Alaska, possibly the Alaska Railroad. Does it include municipalities? I'm trying to get the parameters of what the state means, or does that mean only people that are paid by a warrant from the state of Alaska?
Representative Gardner, you want to speak to that?
Thank you. Yes, exactly. I believe that since we are making legislation for the state, I intend my amendment to be applying only to people who are paid by a warrant from the state of Alaska.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, that's the amendment before you. Any other comments? Okay. Maintain your objection?
Objection is still on the table.
Okay, thank you. We have a roll call, please.
With Amendment Number 2, House Bill 52, Representative Sisnak.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Faircloth.
Yes.
Representative Newman.
No.
Representative Steve?
Yes.
Chair Wilson is away. Chair Rosen?
Yes.
I guess. 5 days on me.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd offer conceptual number 3. And whether it's the right place now that we're changing this around or not, to page 1, line 13, following the last of the sentence, to read something like, this section does not require the employer to grant paid leave for a separate screening process.
Any objection to the amendment?
For the purposes of discussion, I guess since I'm not... Thank you. Since I'm not familiar with the process and how much screening is involved and when and how far ahead of time and this and that, and given that Representative Faircloth had talked about providing a paid leave of absence, which to me I think already covers that, and my concern is that if this amendment passes and say I'm a donor, I go to Seattle and I have to have blood work done and 3 days later do something else and a week later, even though it's one trip for me and all part of the same process, I just want to be sure we're not limiting that coverage and saying, well, the first half of the time I was gone is not going to count. We're not going to be paid.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's
separate all. Separate may take care of that.
Yes, that's why I put the word separate in there. Talking to the sponsor, or in her testimony, it was that she was not intending to this include, you know, people going out to be tested, coming back. That's what the intent of this amendment is and I...
I'll remove my objection.
Okay, objection has been removed. Is there any other objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment, conceptual amendment number 3 has passed. Any other amendments? Representative Fairclough?
No, I was going to make an attempt to move it out of committee, so
Representative Seaton, did you have any other?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to add to move conceptual amendment number 4, which would be probably in somewhere in section in this first section 2, and that would be that this leave class is not donatable to a pool. And this is just meant as clarifying what has been stated by the sponsor.
It's so not donated to what?
To a pool. In other words, this.
Go ahead.
Speaking to clarifying the amendment, we do have personal leave. We've got annual leave. Those can are something that the employee has, and they can donate to a pool. The question that was raised is, are we creating a new class that can be pooled and shared among all employees, in which case there is no 80-hour maximum in essence. And so this makes it clear that this is a personal leave for the person that is not something that they have as a benefit that they can take or give to other other people through a pool.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number 4 has passed. We are now on any other amendments. Seeing none, I would entertain a motion. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move from committee HB 252 as amended. That's 25LS08-17/C. From committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I object, and the only reason I object is just tell me what the amendments were, how it was changed so I know how to vote.
Okay, if I may.
I'll tell you how to vote.
We had an amendment that changed it to be state employees only, and therefore it took out the private employees so you didn't have to worry about 100 or more.
Okay.
We had another amendment that you just heard Representative Seaton made, which is amendment number 4. That designated this did not create another leave pool that already exists within the state. Amendment number, what were the other two for?
One was taken from Shall to May.
Yeah.
Well, and the other was the separate trip for testing preparation.
Oh, right. That it would not be granted a leave for separate testing, that the testing that's included in the transplant itself will be covered, but not any other additional testing. Those are the three amendments that passed, that changed it all. The other one failed. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. I removed my objection.
Okay. So there is no objection. So House Bill 252, as amended, has passed out of committee, and we'll move on. Thank you very much. I'll give the gavel back to the chair for anything else she needs to do.
I adjourn. As of right now, there's not a meeting on. Oh, no, that is being held in another committee.
Oh.
So I adjourn, and as far as I know, there's no meeting Thursday unless something pops up. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.